Excuse me, may I talk to you for a second?
Yes. This is the Black Real Estate Dialogue. And the purpose of the Black Real Estate Dialogue is to document the journey of an up-and-coming real estate investor and to share the stories of successful Black real estate investors.
Welcome back to the Black Real Estate Dialogue Podcast Closing Day. And yo, look, man, this is a banger, episode 59. Chris Senegal, you've seen him everywhere, literally. He's known as one of the most incredible developers of real estate in the country. And his story is quite riveting. He started from absolutely like the bottom, man, and built it his way. And I love this clip because it talks about the importance of reinventing yourself and being okay with going from step to step in real estate. That literally he started out, you know, with fixing flips and then worked his way up to developing. And so this episode is literally all about the power of reinventing yourself and not staying stuck in one place, that there is progress in your ability to reinvent yourself. So let's get into it. This is Chris Senegal from episode 59, Closing Day. Let's run it.
So one thing that's also interesting is that you reset a couple of times to up to this point. You know, you kind of did what you had to do for the moment. So whether it's like 9 or 5, whether it was the flipping and landlording, until it was time to move to the next thing. And, you know, I think that's a big key right there. You know, just not being afraid to kind of reinvent yourself and transition and move on to the next phase of life, to the next phase of investing.
Yeah, one of my favorite quotes is, you know, be steadfast in your goals, but be flexible in your approach. Because, I mean, that's just the key. There's no way you can sit down and write out a plan and for it really to come to fruition exactly as you write it out. It's just impossible. So your only goal is to put energy out there, do things, and treat the failures as feedback on what you need to adjust, right, and what you need to change. So, you know, I'm in Houston. It's a lot harder to get a lot of good deals to flip in Houston because it's so competitive. Other markets, it's easy to get good deals. I know guys in Jersey making 100 grand per flip like all day. I'm just not in that market. So for me, I have to adjust my plan. I can't stick with what I thought in my head was going to work. I have to adjust to my market and make the best decision for me that's going to get me to the next level, right? So yeah, that's really been my approach. I have shifted several times. Fix and flip was cool. Rental properties was cool. But for me, in like 2013, I said, well, what if I can control an entire block? Like, what happens if I buy this whole block and I decide to do something with it? And what if it takes me even 3 or 4 years to get that project done? And let me look at the numbers and look at the profit. And let me compare that to if I'm flipping maybe one house every 2 or 3 months. And let me see what those numbers look like. And so what it equated to was me waiting those 3 years to do a bigger project yielded me a bigger return and with less stress. So that's when I really decided to make that pivot.
Definitely. So can you talk about just that first time, like, you know, going from the idea to action, so the idea of, you know, if I can control a whole block, to when you actually were able to do it and how it all worked?
Yeah, so it all kind of happened really quickly in the first year. And what I realized is the same principles that wholesalers use to find distressed owners. There's distressed portfolio owners, just like there's distressed individual property owners. And some of them own their houses free and clear because like they or their portfolios free and clear because, you know, they've been in the industry that long. So for me, it became targeting real estate portfolio owners that have no debt on the property. So either they've paid off the mortgage because they've owned it so long, or they've inherited it. And that second generation, man, they fumble the ball a whole lot when it comes to real estate. And so that's why I always correct people when they say real estate is generational wealth. It's really not. It's financial freedom for you, unless you have put the right systems and the right management in place so that whether your kids want to actively be landlords or not, you know, then that those assets are still performing for them. And most of the time it doesn't happen. Every big acquisition I've made through creative financing, which is seller financing, owner financing, has either been a landlord who's a tired landlord and the kids don't want to deal with what they saw their parents go through, or it's somebody that's already inherited the property and haven't been taking care of it, you know? So yeah, that was my transition. Finding those folks, the first one I found actually was a Jewish guy whose father owned 26 blocks in Fifth Ward, which is an all black neighborhood. And this guy had inherited this block. And I was able to sit down with him and talk to him. And he's like, I want $500,000. And this is when they were calling his neighborhood the Bloody Nickel. It was Fifth Ward. They called it the Bloody Nickel. But I'm like, okay, that's a little bit high. But hey, you're right on the main freeway from the international airport. I can see downtown. I can throw a rock at the Astro Stadium. I was like, I'm willing to play ball. So negotiated owner finance deal with him, give him 10% down, start making payments to him. And that's how I was able to contiguously own a whole block in 2013. So, you know, 2018, when buy the block started becoming trendy, I was like, okay, I've been doing this. It's cool that other people are catching on, you know? So, but yeah, man, so that was my transition. You know, and I always buy things that already have some type of revenue already coming from. So this block, it already had some of the houses were leased out. It had an old grocery store that was leased out, but, you know, it was sketchy. But I converted it over to parolee housing for the first few years because I could rent the rooms out individually. Which generated a lot more revenue while I figured out the development play that I want to do with the property. So
definitely. So one thing that I'm picking up already is that you're a very creative guy. So
yeah, man, for sure.
Definitely. So like each part of the story thus far, you use some creativity, some outside the box thinking to get things done. So I think,
when you look at any institutional process, it wasn't created for us to be successful. It's really created for the successful to be successful. And it's hard for you to get into that circle. And like the property I'm talking about, if I would have went to a bank and said, hey, I'm making $80,000 a year and I have good credit, and there's no new construction in this neighborhood, there's no flips in this zip code, will you give me $500,000? They would have said, hell no. You know, they would have shut me down. Matter of fact, like 23 different lenders actually did shut me down when I was trying to do my new construction on that same block. But, you know, when you find other ways to take control of the property, like I'm saying, seller financing is the key for me. You know, you don't have to wait for anybody else's outside approval. You don't have to wait for anybody else to say you're bankable or you're financeable. You know, you just go with your own motion and you make calculated bets based off of studying real estate trends in your market and understanding that it will come and you will be ahead of the curve by controlling it before it comes.
Definitely. So you mentioned that, you know, after owning that area, those blocks for a while, that you started new construction. So can you talk mm-hmm. to us more about that? Was that like always the idea, or was it something that kind of came along? Like, you know what, I think I could develop on this land.
Yeah. So I bought the property in 2013. And like I said, I was watching the development trends in the city and I knew that it was eventually going to hit this neighborhood. I just didn't know when. So it was a calculated risk, a calculated investment. I bought in 2013. In 2016, the biggest developer in Houston bought 150 acres on the south end of the same neighborhood and announced they were going to do this big mixed use development. So for me at that point, I was like, okay, now the bet has paid off. Now what am I going to do? And, you know, gentrification is something huge that happens in our communities. And for me, it was like, okay, what can I do to counter the narrative of what usually happens? And so for me, the first thing I thought of was, well, number one, we as the successful Black community always miss the value appreciation waves that happen when our neighborhoods get gentrified. Because we're out in the suburbs and we're mad because somebody's renovating the neighborhood we grew up in. No, it needs to be the opposite. It needs to be, once we find out they're renovating or revitalizing or redeveloping, we need to be in lockstep on the side of them controlling as much of the real estate around there as possible. And one way for me to make that happen was to tear down this old grocery store that was at the end of its useful life. I couldn't get a grocery store to come back, to take that parolee program and move it to another site and take this entire block and build new construction and target young Black working professionals who are in the suburbs. Most of them don't have kids yet, so they're not worried about school systems, but they're in the suburbs with a house that's gonna appreciate 2-3% a year and put them right in the heart of redevelopment where their house value and their land value is gonna double in the next 5 years. So that was my model, and that's what I decided to do with that property. And it's been working so far. You know, I've built and sold 5 of them. I've increased the value. I set my own comparable sales because there was no new construction in the zip code. First one sold for $279. within the same year. By the time I sold the last one, I sold it for $298,000. So my first buyer already has almost $20,000 in equity in her house. And I'm waiting for the next phase to come out of permitting right now. Hopefully next couple of weeks, I'm building another 9. And so those will start at right at 300, which is still affordable for the young working professional, and you know, with interest rates where they are. And yeah, everybody that owns a house, I know for sure they're gonna have $150,000 worth of equity in their home in a couple of years. Once that, it's a $2.4 billion development that's gonna be like literally less than a mile away from my development site. So everybody that owns that real estate over there is gonna have tremendous value appreciation.
Wow. That's incredible, man. That's incredible. So what's that process like, just doing like the ground up development, new construction and so forth? What was that like early on, like when you were just starting to get into it, and how has it evolved since then?
You know, the process, it's a difficult process, because when you think about every other area of real estate, you are taking control of something that's already in existence, right? But the developer is the one that really comes up with the vision and takes something that does not exist and makes it a reality. And so it's a lot to that process. It's the longest process of all real estate careers or real estate professions, because, you know, there's a long permit process, there's a long approval process, then you have a build process, and then you have a sale process. So that could be 2 or 3 years easily, where you can flip a house in 3 months, you know, or 2 months from the time you buy it, flip it, get a contract on it, and go to closing 30 days later. That can happen in 3 months. With new development, 2 to 3 years.
Thank you for listening to another episode of the Black Real Estate Dialogue Podcast. Remember to follow us on Instagram at Black Real Estate Dialogue and on Twitter at Bread Podcast. That's B-R-E-D Podcast. Until next time.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.